Perhaps controversial tonight, Dr. Bruce Goldberg will take us on a trip to Egypt that you will not forget. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Bruce Goldberg conducts a thriving international hypnotherapy practice in Los Angeles, specializing in reincarnation, time travel, and consciousness raising. Dr. Goldberg has conducted thousands of past life regressions and future life progressions since 1974. His first book, Past Lives, Future Lives, was the first book ever written on the future life progression. That was a field that he discovered. And his second book, called The Search for Grace, was made into a CBS movie. Tonight we talk about Egypt, an extraterrestrial and time traveler experiment. And here he is now, Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Thank you, George. I'm fine. Thank you, a.k.a. Dexter Monterey
of the future,
for your kind introduction and the privilege to reincarnate on Coast to Coast for the 30th time.
Well, the 30th reincarnation, yeah, on the program,
huh? Three out for me today.
That is almost historical all by itself. How's the wife morning song?
Morning song is great. In fact, she's been speaking about you all day today.
Really?
Yes.
No wonder my nose was itchy.
And she says hello to Tom also. Tonight and this morning, we're going to discuss Egypt and its development under the influence of extraterrestrials, time travelers from our future, and Atlantis and Lemuria. We're going to discuss past life regression, the Akashic Records, Men in Black, teleportation, and I will demonstrate evidence, actual evidence, of extraterrestrials and time travelers in ancient Egypt. We will also discuss how to prevent an abduction by an ET. I want to thank you first, before we begin doing anything, for your kind review of the Egypt book, and I want to just quote what you said.
Sure, go ahead.
Dr. Bruce Goldberg has captivated the mind with this riveting theory of ETs and ancient Egypt, a must read. I very much appreciate that.
Well, I meant it, Bruce. You've not only been a staunch supporter of this program, but you have brought to us some fascinating programs over the years that open up our minds, make us think, and I like this work. It is an evolution. You talk about reincarnation. It's a logical progression for you after all the things that you have done with regards to time traveling and reincarnation. Egypt has been an area that has just mystified all of us because we just don't know what really happened, and your views and your theories are going to be kind of fun and fascinating to listen to. How did you zone in on Egypt?
Well, Egypt has always come up. I mean, when I wrote Past Life, Future Life, my first book was written 25 years ago. Okay, that's been a major bestseller, and it's been a lot of fun. It's the first book ever on progressions. But in that book, I documented many of the cases, about 75 cases, and one of them was a case called Hubert Meets Aliens in Egypt. It's a real chapter, folks. And it's a case where what's interesting is that he was discussing the building of the Pyramid of Giza. And in that chapter, and I refer to that chapter in a few other books to show you the progression, if you will, about how the extraterrestrials were involved, yes, but they didn't have the big thing. We're going to discuss in just a short while the idea of how the Pyramid of Giza was built. And webmaster, at least for tonight, Sean was trying to post some for figures, which we're going to go over. One of them is the anti-gravity flying craft. And we're going to see how the time travelers from our future, not the ETs, were the only ones that had anti-gravity crafts and devices to actually place those thousands of tons, stone blocks, and so perfectly aligned to build the Pyramid of Giza, as well as other megaliths, Stonehenge and other Easter Islands, all these megaliths, as we call them, there are thousands of them around the world. They were built actually with the use of these anti-gravity flying crafts. So my point here is that it went from Hubert Meets Aliens in Egypt, where he was showing how these pulleys and this kind of like primitive system, but then the ETs were, you know, they were mechanical, but they weren't really super on it. And then I discovered through several of my regressions the idea, especially the one particular regression which kicked it off, so to speak, the idea of the time travelers from our future coming in there and doing the anti-gravity flying crafts and then making it so that it became more over and over again. Before, you know, my books, the Egypt book and the predecessor, Time Travelers from Our Future, were the only books ever written on time travelers. The names, dates, and places, and we're going to go into some of the details, mm-hmm. We'll discuss them in a minute. But the point here is that when I did this, the nice thing about this is that Nobody could have known this material. I gather this from people from all over the world. I have an international practice. So people from Australia, South America, Europe, you name it, all over this country have come and reported the same things over and over again. They've given me the same names, the dates, the places, the same technology, which we will discuss, by the way, the beautiful technology of the 36th century. And, you know, this is called Whately's Law of Evidence in Science. If people from all over the world who don't have any communication give you the same information, it must be true.
Now, for us to talk about Egypt and your theories, we've got to talk about what most of us thought was happening in Egypt a long time ago. Give us your thoughts of the conventional history of Egypt, Bruce.
Well, the conventional history of Egypt is one in which people don't know. 3000 BC is when, you know, Egypt was unified. It was primitive, if you will. There were these barbaric people living there. And all of a sudden, within 500 years, you have the Pyramid of Giza, supposedly. Well, we'll see that this is all completely incorrect. I mean, you just can't do that. You just can't have no gradual transition to a pyramid-building civilization. A long preliminary period is absolutely required to acquire the architecture and the mathematical skills needed to transport the heavy stones and align them in unbelievable accuracy. There is no logical way in which primitive nomads in Egypt, say 3000 BC, could possibly have constructed pyramids 500 years later. What is far more likely, and this is what conventional Egyptology and history historians, if you will not like, but again, you know, forbidden archaeology is going to be the key here. What is far more likely is the existence of other highly advanced civilizations. We'll talk about Lemuria, the Pacific equivalent of Atlantis, Lemuria or Mu, as it's called, mm-hmm. Mu. And then there was Atlantis in the Atlantic Ocean, which preexisted Egypt by many thousands of years, and in fact went down, if you will, during the last pole shift, which is about 11,000 BC. And there were also extraterrestrials and time travelers. Now, of course, all those records would be destroyed because of the Great Flood. And we know there was a major pole shift. We know there was a major flood, at least several of them, but the most well-reported one was about 11,000 BC because every culture in the world reported it without any communication. Again, that's Whately's Law of Evidence. So the conventional Egyptology, we know the water erosion on the Sphinx, for example. We know Robert Shaw's work from Boston, the geologist. He's gotten a lot of attention and written books on it, as you know. And we know that's water erosion. The last time there was water erosion in the Sahara Desert was at least 7,000 to 10,000 BC. So it can't possibly have been built in 2500 BC.
Okay, Bruce, other than theories and your work, how did we lose this gap of what happened in where we are now with this puzzlement, this doubt, this confusion of what really happened? What happened? Where was the gap?
Well, you have to go back to two things. Number one is, of course, you have, remember, I'm talking about Egyptian civilization going back to at least 18,000 BC. Now,
yes.
Of course, you know, modern history, if you will, or the history of civilization goes back to 4,000 BC with Sumeria and Egypt. That's because we have written records of that, if you will. You had a major flood 11,000 BC, which is going to wipe away everything, basically, just about everything. But then you have another three little words, MIB, Men in Black.
Men in Black.
And this is, you know, the Men in Black, you know, I have a chapter in my time travels book about the Men in Black, which traces the history. The history is not to 1947 with Roswell. It goes back into antiquity. There have always been Men in Black. Ancient Egypt had Men in Black. Every culture has had Men in Black all the way throughout its history. And I give the complete detailed history there. So what you have is Men in Black are, oh, government agents, there was extraterrestrials, there are time travelers from our future, and there was the Black Brotherhood, which are lower astral entities, all four different types of Men in Black, whose purpose are to repress information. And again, you also have the hierarchy of the Egyptian mystery school priests, the, shall we say, both the theology and the government system rolled into one, if you will, trying to maintain control. And by doing that, they have to hide the evidence. Fortunately, they didn't hide everything. And we're going to show you some examples of what hasn't been hidden, if you will, and that have come up and that are very impressive. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to refer, you've got those three nice figures. If your listeners that are on their computer, If they go,
yeah, let's do that right after the break, okay. Bruce. That'll give everybody an opportunity to get to the website to look at those pictures that you supplied to us under feature article, coasttocoastam.com. Just get ready to call those up right after the break, everyone, and we'll have Bruce go through them and explain them because they are fascinating. When you talk about the Men in Black, I mean, was it their role to withhold information, to deceive, to block information from getting to us?
Sure. It's just like the Pentagon does today. It's just like the, remember Eisenhower's farewell address, beware of the military-industrial complex.
Sure. Well, whose mission was it for them to do it? I mean, who created them?
Well, it's always a matter of power and control. Every, civilization, a society consists of three bureaucracies, all of which maintain control by making you codependent and by having you just say, yowza, yowza, yowza. One, of course, is government. The second is corporations. And the third is religion, all of which are very non-democratic in their constitution. And they control people. They try to by manipulating them and by having them be codependent and scaring them.
Now, Egypt, of course, being a focal point of history, but then you talk about Lemuria and Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Very critical when you think of what happened in Egypt.
Well, you have to understand, the key issue here is that Egypt was a colony, first of Lemuria via India, the old Rama Empire,
mm-hmm.
which is well documented in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita and all the ancient Indian texts, if you will, their religious documents. And then Atlantis came later because it was the main colony of Lemuria. It was its main colony for about 100,000 BC. And then it settled Egypt from the Mediterranean, if you will. So you had the northern part of Egypt, which is actually called the Cairo area today, if you will, which is actually called Lower Egypt. And the southern part, which was called Upper Egypt, because the Nile flows from south to north, was settled via India, via Lemuria, by the and they had planes. They had these. We'll discuss these aircrafts, if you will. They had nuclear power. They had television, which I'm going to demonstrate. They've had radio. They've had a technology equivalent to what we had today. The problem is, they also had the three words. The three-letter word that controls civilization that you discussed a little bit in your early hour, and that is war.
Yeah. In ancient texts kind of allude to that, don't they?
Oh, the Mahabharata not just alludes to it, it describes a nuclear war, by the way, between the Atlanteans and the Rama Empire. It also describes the Valixi, the aircraft of the Atlanteans, and the Vimanas, the aircraft of the Indians, the Rama Empire, if you will. And it gives tremendous details about anti-gravity, nuclear power, nuclear explosions. I mean, this is heavy stuff. This is a Steven Spielberg story here.
Did this war, Bruce, that occurred, this nuclear holocaust that occurred, did it wipe out, in your opinion, most of the civilization on this planet at the time, or just these regions?
No, these were regional things. This wasn't a worldwide nuclear explosion. These were things that were limited. There are remnants of nuclear explosions in Ireland. There are fused metal and glass, if you will, that in the Middle East, if you will, and India, of course. So there are several parts around the world where there were nuclear explosions, but it didn't cover the entire planet. It wasn't like the dinosaur being knocked out 65 million years ago, that kind of thing.
So it's not like the entire world was aflame, then?
No. The entire world has never, the only time the entire world has ever been compromised has been when asteroids have hit the planet or the radiation level because of the geophysical disturbance.
All right, these areas, though, must have been intensely technological. What about the other regions on the planet? Or was it just Atlantis and Lemuria that had the kind of technology to do things like this?
Oh, you must understand. It was Atlantis and Lemuria at first, but they had colonies all around the world. This is like the British Empire. The sun never sets on the British Empire.
Sure.
So they were around Easter Island. They settled Australia. They discovered the South Pole long before we ever did. I mean, they had colonies all over the place. Now, they didn't install nuclear power in all of them, of course. Egypt would be actually India was more relevant than was Egypt when it comes to the nuclear aspect. You didn't have nuclear explosions, but we'll discuss how there were ET wars, where there were what we call the electric wars of prehistory. There were wars where, I'll describe cases where people were like, you know, farmers, just they're growing wheat, and all of a sudden they hear these big explosions. They run for cover because you have the Lyrans and the Reptilians going at each other with their crafts and just shooting each other like a Star Wars movie. The peace was negotiated by time travel from our future, as well as certain other interdimensional extraterrestrials.
Do you think they got to the moon a long time ago?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Something I suspected for a long, long time.
Understand, nothing is new here. We're just repeating history, you know? I mean, this has all been done before. You know, ancient Sumeria, which is now Iraq today, but Sumeria 4,000 years ago had a post office, you know?
Yeah.
I just got one of their letters. I mean,
you know. It was a long time. Addressed to you or Santa?
Santa, who spoke, an Iraqi language. No, but I mean, you had everything we've had. If you go back into history, do you remember that? You ever studied some of the old inventors, like this guy named Hero around the 2nd century AD? He invented the steam engine.
Okay, not him specifically, but...
Mean, this has been around electricity. The Greeks knew about electricity because they stole it from the Egyptians.
Sure.
We're going to talk about the Temple of Dendera when we discuss that one, where the Egyptians, not only did they have electricity, which is documented by their electroplating of their vases, and remember the Baghdad battery that was found.
Yes.
That goes back 2,000 years ago. But they also had television. We're going to show that there was actually television in ancient Egypt.
How many times do you think people on this planet have annihilated themselves?
Well, several times. I mean, you know, you look at the Hopi Indians. They talk about the four major cataclysms, the four major things.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them go into that. You have the Hyperborean civilization, the Polarian civilization, the Lemurian, the Atlantean. There's four civilizations right there. So they say that there's four major wipeouts, if you will. I can't, you know, testify to that. That's just the literature. But I'll tell you right now, we've gone to this over and over again. You know, Graham Hancock reports that all you need is 10,000 years of no major cataclysms and you can have an advanced civilization. We've had plenty of 10,000-year periods of time to do that, and it's been done. Lemuria goes back to 200,000 BC, all the way to 11,000 BC, when it went down for the third time, as Atlantis goes back to about 125,000 BC as a major colony.
You know the old saying, Bruce, that history repeats itself. Are we heading down the same path?
Well, this is the good news. The good news here is, contrary to what you see in the field, and maybe many of you guessed, this is a trial time in our life, if you will, but the future, especially towards the end of the century and beyond, is very positive. And that's where the time travelers come in, because they're not here just to take sperm and egg samples or to put probes up your nose and
other
whatever.
Spots. Yeah.
They're here to grow, help us grow spiritually, because they're us in the future, and they have a vested self-interest. And this is what I like. I like vested self-interest when it comes to spiritual growth. And they're here, and they're more powerful because of the technology. We're talking about people from the year, from the 31st to the 50th century. You can't even imagine the technology and the growth that's going to happen. We're going to get an insight to it, of course.
Has Dr. Zahi Hawass, head of Egypt's Antiquities, seen your book?
Well, you know something, Art used to mention him in the old days, too. I have never spoken to him. I would love to. He tells me that I've got to speak with this guy. Okay?
You have to. We got to get this book in his hands. I'd love to get his reaction.
I'd like to have a joint. I'd like to have, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to have you and I and Zahi Hawass on December 21st, 2012, because I'd like to do the show when you're on the air during, because there's going to
be... That's that Friday night show, remember?
It's a Friday night, and I'll tell you one thing. There's going to be no problems, because all that, the only reason why that calendar ends is because they ran out of rock.
You may be right about that, Bruce. Where do you get this book?
Oh, the book is available nationwide, by the way, and of course they can get it from my site. And I'd like to make, this is an offer that I make unique to your audience. If your listeners are kind enough, of course they can order on Amazon or anywhere else. If they order the Egypt book directly from my site, I am going to throw in a free past life regression CD, which will guide them into their own lives, because it is my testimony and statement affirmatively, like you wouldn't believe, that every single one of us has had many past lives in ancient Egypt. Now, at the same time, the people who want to experience, like the teleportation, traveling through the fifth dimension, and the idea of meeting time travelers, if you will, my Time Travelers Training Program CD album, if you will, if they order that through my office, I will throw in the brand new novel I have out called Time Traveler Confidential, The Apocalypse, which I describe, even though it's a novel, it's a cute story, it goes into time travelers coming back in time, communicating with their parallel selves and parallel universes. But most importantly, the technology depicted, which we'll discuss a little bit later, is actually real technology from the 36th century. So that book has a lot of real double T technology, and it's fun. It's a surprise ending. It's got a lot of things to it. It's my first novel. But more importantly, the technology is real, and we're going to discuss some of that.
Okay, everyone, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Click the link there under the feature article. You might have to hit your refresh button, F5. And get ready to look at some of the illustrations that Bruce Goldberg has sent us. And we're going to go through it piece by piece as we continue to discuss how the Pyramid of Giza was built, when did it occur, how did this all happen. And he's also going to talk about some reptilian time travelers later on Coast to Coast AM. Well, remember this number, 1-888-727-5505. That's the phone number for After Dark, where you can call and subscribe to After Dark or go online at coasttocoastam.com. After Dark is part of Coast to Coast AM, full-color newsletter magazine where you get some neat stories on Coast to Coast. You're getting right now 13 issues for the price of 12. Okay, if you have a computer, get up to coasttocoastam.com, look at the feature article and the pages that Bruce has supplied to us. If you don't have a computer, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, let's make sure you also describe what we're looking at for people who may be driving around, okay?
I certainly will. I've gotten several emails just to make a clarification. When I mentioned before the break, that offer I made about the free Past Life Regression CD, if they buy the book, the Egypt book through my office, mm-hmm. and the free novel, the Time Traveler Confidential novel, if they buy the Time Traveler's Training Program, please, you have to mention the offer and that you heard it on Coast to Coast, or else I won't know where you heard it from. So if you mention
okay.
that, then of course it's all relevant. If not, you know, it won't be relevant. Also, just for the benefit of the listeners, there are exercises on my site, too. Those listeners of yours that don't use computers, if they call my 1-800-KARMA-4-U number or 1-800-527-6248, I will send them a packet which will include the various exercises of going out of the body and all the material that we're talking about tonight, too. So I want them to, those that aren't computer compatible, to have a benefit of what we're doing here. Let's go. We're talking now about the four different time travelers. This will be take you to the figure one, which is when you click on the here on the home page of your home page. Figure one will show you the four different types of time travelers. One is in the upper left-hand corner is the gray. Now, this is your typical Steven Spielberg gray, if you will. He's got large black eyes, 3 to 5 feet tall, with grayish skin, mm-hmm. no earlobes, 4 fingers and toes. They appear as little whites, some of them, little blues. They're kinder and gentler little time travelers, if you will, than the grays. Neither type has body hair, and they all wear one-piece uniforms with the insignia that are often triangular in shape. Now, this is important. If you see a gray, you don't know whether they're from the current century, which are sometimes quite nasty and will do a lot of the procedures that people don't like implants, etc. The time travelers won't do that. The time travelers may take sperm and egg samples occasionally for the grays because of their fertility problems, but they're not going to stick metal implants up your nose. That's going to be only a current day gray. But a triangular insignia is relevant. That's only a futuristic representation. So if you see somebody wearing a little triangle, you can be assured he's from the future.
Okay, now how do we know that this being is from the future and not from some planet somewhere?
Well, first of all, they will communicate with you telepathically. Time travelers use the telepathic communication as the main form of communication. They will tell you that. I mean, you say, well, how do you know to believe them? The grays from the current century, my experience has been, do not fake as time travelers. If they're time travelers, they're time travelers. Plus, they're going to be surrounded by the others that we're going to be talking about, the hybrids and the pure human. So that's, you know, your normal gray from this century does not have a human and a hybrid with him to help him do his things as the time travel team represents. So it's really not that difficult to do that. And of course, the time travelers are spiritual, whereas most of the current century grays are not real spiritual. You know, the stories you hear about are not cool. 15%, my research shows, of the abductions that are reported, and there are about 5 million Americans, by the way, who've been abducted, according to the Roper poll.
Right.
15% are time traveler. The other 85% are current century ETs, if you will, from various different planets, not just from the Zeta Reticuli. But the grays are the most common. They're the ones that they're sort of like the gophers. They do the abductions. They'll do the dirty work. They'll do the little menial tasks, which is kind of ironic because if you would think of a gray today, they must be more technologically advanced than us, maybe more intelligent, because how do they get from, you know, 30 light years away? But in the future, they're the bottom of the ladder here. Now, the next figure to the right of the gray is the hybrid. The hybrid is taller. He's about 5 to 6 feet tall. The skin tone ranges from white hues to bronze, and they look quite human from a distance, except they have large faceted eyes and a very odd-looking forehead. In other words, the closer you get to a hybrid, the more you realize you're not in Kansas anymore.
Is it a bony-type forehead?
I know the picture makes it look bony. It's almost like, think of a caveman kind of like, you know, recessed forehead. It's not like bony. The depiction is a little misleading, but it is definitely odd looking compared to our current Homo sapiens structure today.
Does he have hair?
Oh, yeah, he's got hair.
Okay.
This depiction does not show the hair so much because it was done by the artist with the, you know, same format, if you will. But, you know, they have hair. They look pretty human from a distance. It's when you get close to them that you realize that something's a little bit odd here. Now, the lower left, of course, is the head of a time traveler team, and this is the pure human. Now, the picture that you see here, or this portrait depiction, is actually the actual depiction of Traxa, the time traveler. He's the one who introduced me to art back in 1994.
Right.
Traxa's name spelled backwards says Ask Art, and I've gone through this several times before in the show. Traxa is also pictured on the cover of the Time Traveler from Our Future book and the Time Traveler Confidential novel, so people can see him, and he's also on my site, too, in the article that I had called Meet a Real Time Traveler. Now, the pure humans are much taller. They're 6 to 7 feet tall. They are mostly blonde, blue-eyed, tan, clean-shaven, and always are dressed in white robes, very often with a gold sash, if you will, around it. The ones from the 35th century and beyond will have a teleportation device, which looks like a little camera or like a little transistor radio that's attached to the front of the robe, in which they can actually teleport back in time. Teleportation will not be the mode of time travel until the 35th century. Between the 31st and 34th century, they use in large wormholes.
Bruce, here's a question, puzzlement question. Why aren't these time travelers bounding all races? I mean, they always seem to be like this.
Well, they actually do have all the races. The problem was, and just think of it logically, if you go back to ancient times, if you were a blonde, blue-eyed person, Caucasian, you'd be worshipped as a god. If you were a darker-skinned person and you're coming from the future, they would kill you. And that's what happened in the beginning. When time travel was discovered in the 31st century, around 3050, by Tatos, the Greeks called him Hermes, they sent back people of all races. They're all races in the future, but they killed the dark-skinned ones. They killed the Native Americans. They killed the Afro-Americans, if you will. And they realized that the ones they weren't killing but worshipping as gods were the Caucasians. So the Caucasians became the majority, but not the sole time traveler, the human, if you will. There are people with dark hair. There are even some dark-skinned ones. But most of the ones that did most of the research, especially in the beginning, seemed to be the Caucasians simply because they survived. It was just a matter of survival.
Okay.
Now, the one to the right of the pure human, or Traxa, is a reptilian. This is a nasty-looking guy. Now, the reptilian is never a member of a time traveler team. They have vertical pupils and lizard-like skin. They're tall. They're 6 to 8 feet tall. They weigh about 200 pounds. They don't have wings, so they don't have the Draco types in the future.
Mm-hmm.
They're green to blue to gray to brown in the color of their skin. And they are cannibalistic. These are nasty creatures. They are usually escaping future time cops. They've committed crimes. There are very few reptilians that you really want to meet. And the reason why you hear very few reports of reptilians compared to the Greys and the Pleiadians and the others is because they tend to eat their mistakes. They're really nasty. You don't want to run into a reptilian. So this is not part of a team, but I put them on there because I want to show you that occasionally you may run into a reptilian. If you do, just do the Dionne Warwick and walk on by.
All right. And these four depictions, how did you come about getting them?
Well, these were described by patients of mine. Again, these are people from all over the world. The artist, Jeanine Cooper, who was kind enough to do this, when I asked her to do these things, she was actually getting telepathic communication from Traxa, for the pure human, and a few of the other colleagues to give the depiction so she could draw them more accurately.
Okay, so that's the four main time travelers.
Now, these are the, again, well, you know, three are really the main ones. The reptilians are the... the escaped criminals, so you don't want to really deal with them, okay? They travel through hyperspace, just to give a big global assessment here. They travel through hyperspace and move interdimensionally. In other words, they're moving through the fifth dimension. People could think of the astral plane if they want to make it simple. Therefore, they're invisible to us because they function at a frequency, vibrational rate far beyond our level. When they act on the Earth, if, for example, somebody is going to expose them or they may run into problems, they can place a person in a suspended state of animation. They can freeze them, if you will. They won't hurt you, but they can, you know, make sure that you don't cause any problems or don't expose them to the government, which, of course, a Men in Black would take them out if they were made public. That's why you don't see them on CNN. They can enter our dream states and have, in fact, functioned as spirit guides and angelic beings. I mean, there are real spirit guides and angels. You know, I wrote the book called Spirit Guide Contact. I mean, they're all real. But a time traveler, because of their great technology and because they can function in our dream levels, they have whispered into our ears and caused many of our scientific geniuses, the Thomas Edisons, the Da Vincis, the Einsteins, the Teslas, if you will. They have also stimulated our artistic creators, our painters and writers, etc. So a lot of our creativity and scientific achievements have been due to time travelers.
They have been affecting us then for how long?
Forever. Okay. Basically, going back to Lemuria goes back 200,000 B.C.
Now, are they extraterrestrial or simply earthbound time travelers?
Well, of course, you've got the pure human, like Traxy is a pure human. He's been, well, remember, now, you have to understand, none of us on this Earth are pure human, okay? We all have extraterrestrial genetic
sure.
awareness. The Lyrans and the Syrians are the main extraterrestrial groups that have inhabited this planet for the last 5 million years and have definitely genetically altered our, shall we say, evolution, if you will. So we all have some genetic extraterrestrial blood, but if you want to consider us as humans today, the humans, of course, are pure human, as much as we can call them pure. But the grays, because they've been on this planet for hundreds and hundreds of years, by the time you have the 31st century, they sort of like have their gray card. So they're earthlings, if you will, but of course their genetic origin is extraterrestrial. The hybrids, of course, are a mixture between pure humans and the grays and other ET races. And the reptilians, of course, are just pure reptilian, and they're nasty, and you don't want to deal with them.
When Zechariah Sitchin was writing his 12th Planet book, and he talked about beings coming from, the Anunnaki,
mm-hmm.
are they any of these four?
Well, actually, no. I don't have any confirmation to that. No, Traxa is the 12th Planet mentality does not fit into my paradigm for my research. The Zeta Reticuli, of course, gives you the grays. The hybrids are mixtures. The humans are from this planet. The reptilians come from the draconian system, whatever out there. So I don't have that mentality here. I'm not saying he's wrong. I just don't have confirmation from my research to support that.
Okay, but you're saying these time travelers come from different regions of the universe.
Well, yeah, the extraterrestrials do. The humans, of course, come from Earth.
Right, right. And that's just the one that we see on the bottom left.
That's good old Traxa. Again, they look like he looks like a Malibu beach bum, by a surfer. But in reality, that depiction of him, he's 75 years young in that depiction. Because in the future, he's a 36th century time traveler. By that time, you're going to live to be between 500 and 900 years young.
And what effect have these four styles, these types, had on our history?
Well, I mean, forget the reptilian for a moment. They're just the nasty criminals. Now, the other three, if you will, have guided the history of Egypt, which goes back to at least 18,000 B.C. Some feel goes back to about 30,000 B.C., but my research doesn't confirm that yet. They have guided Atlantis and Lemuria. They've guided Egypt. They've guided all of our civilizations, and they're here today. You won't see them because they function in our dream levels in the fifth dimension. But if you think, for example, if the average person out there thinks that the beautiful technology we have today, that this history of civilization, forgetting the war and the nasty stuff, but just the technology and the fun stuff, if they think that comes from corporations or the government, wrong, folks. It's extraterrestrials and mostly time travelers that have given us our technology. Time travelers have named all of our countries and all of our cities. These are futuristic names. Tatos, the discoverer of time travel in 3050, give or take a few years, he went back into ancient Egypt and he was known as Thoth. The Greeks called him Hermes. You had the first team consisted of Geb, Osiris, Isis, and Horus. What does that tell you? Those are Egyptian gods.
So you're saying the Egyptians when they talked about their gods, were really talking about time travelers.
Right. Oh, exactly. In fact, this is what's interesting is in the pause of the Sphinx in Cairo, they have these little, if you go inside the temples, they have these little depictions, little figurines, if you will. And when they picture Isis and Osiris, guess what they look like?
What?
Blonde, blue-eyed, Caucasian. No Egyptian is blonde, blue-eyed, and Caucasian. You didn't have Swedish flight attendants fooling around with Egyptians 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, okay? They were dark-skinned just like they are today with curly, dark black hair, brown eyes, very deep brown eyes, and short. That's your Egyptian today, and that's your Egyptian of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. So why would they make Isis and Osiris their gods, their head gods, if you will, the two of the most significant ones? Isis was the god of medicine, and Osiris was their main big guy who becomes the god of the dead. You know, when you're crossing the spirits, you have to, Osiris is the one who determines where you go for eternity, you know. Why would they make them into Caucasian, blonde, blue-eyed, people versus their own racial structures? It's because there were time travelers from the future.
Good point. You're going to have, by the way, every flight attendant write down you in this one.
That's okay. I work with a lot of flight attendants.
Now, your next picture on the next page is pretty darn fascinating. Now, the one on the bottom, of course, we'll talk about in a second.
Sure.
Abydos, I've looked at with incredible fascination, and I've got my own thoughts on that. But let's go with that first depiction that you have up
Dendora
there.
Dendora doesn't get as much attention. Now, Dendora is, this is a depiction from the Temple of Dendora. This was the archaeologists and the historians and Egyptologists date this to the Ptolemy era, which is 300 B.C., you know, after Alexander the Great died and Ptolemy took over Egypt, to about 30 B.C. That's good old Cleopatra the Seventh. We all know what happened to her. And this depicts a, you'll look at, if you look first, let me just make a statement. St. Augustine reported that a lamp was present in an Egyptian temple dedicated to Isis, which neither wind nor water could extinguish. That's very important because that's going to symbolize electricity in a moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you use candles or torches to build the Pyramid of Giza, you have to have lighting inside to build the Pyramid of Giza or any major structure. Then you would have sooty deposits on the walls, which have never been found. So we know they didn't use torches. They didn't use Rube Goldberg devices with mirrors. So they had to have some way of lighting up the interior of the Pyramid of Giza.
I see what you mean about the torches. If what we think of the ancients was correct, that they could only use a flame and a torch, you'd have deposits. It's all over the place.
Right, of course. And there's none. It never been. Never. Now, the French archaeologist Mariette discovered that Egyptians knew about electricity because they knew enough to electroplate gold jewelry. It's as simple as that. Well, what you have here is a depiction of, if you look at these, you have these two technicians with these two, it looks like giant light bulbs on top of these pillars. Now, what's interesting is that there's a braided cable attaching from this little box where the god Horus sits to the, if you look to the
right. It's going into that.
Okay. That's the god Horus with a little like energy source, like a little ball over his head. That's an energy source. There's braided cables. Braided cables only symbolize electrical cables. Mm-hmm. Any electrician or mechanical engineer will tell you that. Now, you have the cable seems to run the full length along these pillars, which have been identified by electricians and scientists as a high-voltage insulator,
mm-hmm.
Okay, which is electricity now. Then you also have these two light bulb-type tubes, which really have been identified as Crookes tubes, which are primitive television tubes. Television sets were originally Crookes tubes. So you have energy sources, you have bundles of electrical wires, you have two technicians. The one on the left, if you look at him carefully, look at his face, look at his eyes, you're going to see the equivalent of a headset and goggles on him. He looks like he's getting information.
He looks like he has one of those Bluetooth things in his ear.
Or a black tooth in this picture. He's getting maybe he's getting some information from a producer or a director on a television set.
So you're saying this is a camera?
Well, this is not a camera. He's got think of it as a headset, basically.
All right.
And goggles to prevent.
No, but is the apparatus a television camera?
Well, we can't see the camera. What he's getting is just think of it like you're on a television set and a producer or director there is going to have a headset on. He's going to have a Bluetooth or equivalent something to get information from the director or the executive producer. Now, you also have, so you have the Crookes tube, you have high voltage insulators, you have braided cables. Okay, now, this definitely is electricity. Nobody will deny that. No scientist looking at this thing, the way it's set up, will deny that that's a depiction of electricity. Conservatively, it's electricity. That's how they lit up the interior of the Pyramid of Giza and others. On the more extreme level, because of the Crookes tube, now you have a television set.
Let's come back to this picture, Bruce, when we come back at the top of the hour, because I want you to tell me about that picture within the tube, which looks like a snake to me. And then what's that figure on the right holding some kind of a cleaver in his hand? We'll be back.